WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. My name is Jason Mann, and with me today is Don Owens of the Future Endeavors Podcast. Don, how you doing?
What's up, Jason? How's it going?
Doing well. Today we are talking about WWE Money in the Bank 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Called by some the greatest pay-per-view in WWE history, and it certainly had its moments. I don't know if I'd quite go that far, but you've seen every WWE pay-per-view since 1993. So what are your thoughts?
I don't know about greatest of all time, but greatest in a very, very long time, that's for sure. Definitely best of 2011, and one of the best in the 2000s, that's for sure. Great stuff from top to bottom. So very excited about this one.
Okay. All right, definitely. Well, I think the biggest story, obviously, would be CM Punk against John Cena. CM Punk winning the WWE Championship and leaving the company, at least for now. And the story building to that, of course, CM Punk had a infamous work shoot promo a couple weeks back where he ran down Vince and Triple H and Stephanie and the corporate suits along with Vince, including John Laurinaitis and so on and so forth, reaching a lot of taboos that WWE doesn't normally do. Got a lot of people talking, drew a lot of interest, some media interest, some different things, and followed it up with a really strong segment with Vince and Cena, where Cena begged to have felt that Punk deserved the match, and that all he had done was, basically exercise his freedom of speech and wanted the match. And Vince eventually relented, and then of course the Vince and CM Punk a confrontation right before the match. And the atmosphere was just incredible. It was really, really something special for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. That Chicago crowd is always amazing, and I've heard several wrestlers, past and present, talk about, how much they love that arena and how much they love performing in that arena. And it's just, I think when you have a great crowd, it just makes, each match just so much more, so much more fun to get into. It was a great, great crowd, and I think it just got people more pumped into every single match. It was an amazing night, and the crowd definitely helped elevate it to that level it needed to be at.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really just an electric atmosphere, especially for the main event. Obviously the fans really behind Punk. Cena mostly booed. I guess there were a couple of dueling chants where the high-pitched voices of likely the children and the women were with Let's Go Cena. But for the most part, it was certainly dominated by Punk's fans, and they were really, really enthusiastic for him to win the title. It was really a great match. On first viewing, I was less impressed. I thought it was very good, but the flaw stood out to me a little bit more, mostly on Cena's end, as far as just kind of a little bit of the consistency on the selling and a few moments of sloppiness. But the second viewing, I really I noticed the strengths much more. Just a lot of crisp work from both. They seem to kind of go at a faster speed on certain things, like a lot of hard closed lines, really crisp kicks by Punk, just a lot of really good action. And it definitely fell within the WWE standard match. It wasn't like it was like a Ring of Honor match or something, but they really, within that framework, were able to tell a good story and obviously led the the finish was Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis coming out, and Cena being able to lock sort of a distracted Punk into his STF submission, and Vince sending Laurinaitis out to try to ring the bell to screw Punk, Cena punching him out to not allow that to happen, and then of course when Cena comes back in, he's hit with a GTS, and Punk wins the title, and Vince sort of flips out, calls Alberto Del Rio in to cash in his Money in the Bank, and Punk gives him a swift kick and then runs to the crowd, smiles and holds the belt at Vince, and then runs away. And then that was basically the end of it. So pretty exciting stuff. Definitely great storytelling, good moves, a lot of really, really exciting match.
Yeah, I can't believe it took you a second viewing to realize how great it was. amazing match. One of the best main events. It'll definitely be on the list for match of the year. That's for damn sure. You know, I didn't think there was going to be a match this year that would come close to Triple H and Undertaker from WrestleMania, but this one is right up there with it. You know, I thought Cena did great. I thought Punk did amazing. It's just so crazy to see where Punk was at this pay-per-view after the year that he's had, you know, because he hasn't had that stellar of a year, honestly. You know, his win, I can't remember which pay-per-view, it might have been Over the Limit or Extreme Rules, but his win at one of the last pay-per-views was like his first win in like a year on mm-hmm. pay-per-view. You know, I mean, he was on a major losing streak, so it's just so crazy to see how he went from that to then having this five-star match with John Cena and kicking out of three attitude adjustments and getting out of STFs. And, you know, it's like all of a sudden CM Punk's the unbeatable, you know, but it was just great stuff. I mean, it was one of those matches that literally had you on the edge of your seat. And, you know, it was hard to tell which way they were going to go, you know, knowing the angle, knowing the validity of the angle of that CM Punk's contract really was up. You know, you didn't know what was going to happen. You know, this was an easy way for them to write Punk off the storyline, to have him say, hey, it's my last match, I'm going to win the title, I'm going to walk away, you know, and then, of course, John Cena go over, and that's that. You know, especially with the added stipulation of Cena's fired if he loses, you know, a lot of people thought, you know, there's no way in hell Punk's going to win and it's just going to be the safe route. I was predicting CM Punk would win. I was thinking, you know, it just felt with this angle they were going to go a different route. They were going to try to mix things up. They were going to try to make things, you know, new and fresh. And they did a great job with that, starting back, you know, with Punk's promo and just everything he said, everything he did, to where people were second guessing, you know, is this a work? Is this real? I mean, it was just such a strong promo. People didn't know what to think, you know, and then to continue with, you know, unsuspending him. But then at the house shows, he's talking smack to the crowd at house shows and continuing to vent and, you know, and then coming back. This match, you know, just once again, the crowd. You know, WWE did it great where, you know, you knew the match was coming and they just waited a second before they started the music and you already had the fans chanting CM Punk, CM Punk, and just going nuts for him. You know, it was very, very reminiscent of the ECW One Night Stand pay-per-view with John Cena and RVD. You know, where RVD was just so heavily favored. Everybody was booing Cena. You know, if Cena wins, we riot. And we saw basically the same poster hanging from the rafters at Money in the Bank that said, you know, if Punk loses, we riot. And there's no doubt in my mind that some kind of riot would have broke out if Punk didn't win on that night. But, you know, like I said, I mean, they went out there for a good 40 minutes and just had this amazing match back and forth, back and forth. The thing I loved about Money in the Bank was that it was only six matches on the card and they didn't provide any filler. They just gave every match the great amount of time that they each needed to tell a story. And this main event was just so hyped and so many people were into it. I'm so happy they just gave it the time that was allotted. You know, going 40-plus minutes is just awesome. And just to see Punk, you know, after the first attitude adjustment, it was like, okay, cool, I can kind of see it. After the second one, I'm like, wow, no way, you know? And then it's like, and then putting on the STF and then getting to the ropes. And then the second time he put on the STF and he somehow, you know, slid his head in between and then turned that into the Anaconda Vice. Amazing. You know, who's reversed or gotten out of the STF, you know, with John Cena. Nobody, you know? I mean, that was just such a cool maneuver to switch that up. The only better thing to this match would have been if Punk could have got Cena to tap out. I think that would have been the greatest ending to that match, because I'm still waiting to see somebody tap out Cena. You know, but just, you know, the great back and forthness of it, the whole John Laurinaitis thing, and then Cena being like, you know, it was looking like we were going to get the 97 screw job from Survivor Series again. And, you know, Cena saying, it's not going to go down like that. But of course, ends up costing him the match. Go to sleep. He wins. You know, I loved Vince getting frustrated and just getting on the mic and saying, "Get Del Rio out here!" You know, cashing the Money in the Bank, and you know, just great stuff from Punk. You know, who, you know, I read an interview with Punk actually before the pay-per-view, and he said, you know, if somebody tries to cash in on me, you know, I've been there, I've done that. You know, I know what to look for. I'm just going to basically, you know, dodge it and run through the crowd. And that's pretty much exactly what he did. You know, he kicked him in the head and he took off. He blew a kiss to Vince and ran off with the title. And I just thought it was just great storytelling, an amazing match. And, you know, like I said, I mean, there's nothing I can really complain about this. It was just, it left me, you know, very, very happy at the end of this pay-per-view. Because I thought the whole pay-per-view was great, and a lot was lingering on this main event, and it definitely paid off. So my hat's off to both of them. You know, I'm not the biggest Cena fan, but, you know, I'm the first to admit when Cena has an amazing match, and that was a great match on both Punk and Cena's behalf. So great stuff.
Yeah. I liked the how Cena got kind of frustrated and flustered, especially after Punk kicked out of that last attitude adjustment and only got two. I thought that was a really cool, just a nice different moment that you get from Cena, where Cena's always kind of the cool, you know, collected guy, and then he, you know, kind of gets frustrated there with the crowd a little bit as well. So that was kind of cool. You just kind of made it different, and it was pretty exciting. And like I said, yeah, a lot of neat, you know, counters and reversals, and some really good. And you know, Cena kept up pretty well early with the chain wrestling, I thought, you know, working arm bars and wrist locks and, you know, and different things. And it really did feel, you know, particularly the first half was just really, really smooth and tight and really, you know, really good solid action and a lot of great stuff. And then the storytelling was, you know, the strong point of the second half. There were a couple of mishaps here and there on moves, but nothing serious, just, you know. But if you're looking for, you know, a few minor details, that would be the only thing that I would kind of keep it, you know. Like, I would argue that Undertaker Triple H was probably the stronger match, although, you know, again, you know, it's not a, it's, you know, if you want to pick this ahead of it, it's, I certainly wouldn't fault you for that or anything like that. But so anyway, yeah, great stuff, great story. Anxious to kind of see where it goes. Do you have any kind of thoughts on where they might go next?
That's the big question. You know, I mean, my initial prediction was kind of what they did on Raw. You know, I felt if they were going to continue this storyline the proper way, they needed Punk to not be at Raw, you know, to totally sell the fact that, you know, they kept plugging, you know, at midnight, his contract's up and he's out. You know, so everybody kept saying, oh, he's going to be on Raw, he's going to be on Raw. And I'm like, that'll be the biggest mistake if they put him on Raw, you know, because it just totally takes away from the whole angle. You know, the point was supposed to be that he was done, he was out. You know, Punk is tweeting, you know, pictures of the title in his refrigerator. And, you know, it just like crazy stuff saying, you know, oh, where's your, you know, and his Twitter profile now says unemployed WWE champion. It's just great stuff from Punk all the way around. I just got to, you know, really put my hats off to him. But, you know, it just – I felt they had to leave him off. My prediction was a tournament for a new champion, and I hope that this finally results in a new championship title, you know, because we're done with the spinner belt. So let's move on. Let's have a new title debut on Monday. We'll crown a new WWE champion. And, you know, in a couple months or whenever Punk's ready to return, because honestly, there is no doubt in my mind that Punk has re-signed with the WWE. They would not be doing any of this if he was not under contract. So anybody that's still doubting that fact, I mean, honestly, come on. I mean, there's just no way. You know, they have obviously re-signed him, and he's going to take a break, and this is all part of an angle. This is all part of a bigger picture. And I think that bigger picture is here in a couple months or whenever he returns. You know, he's got – it's a whole built-in storyline for him to pop back up. Hey, I'm the true champion, you know. Like, who's – you know, whoever the champion is at that point, you know, is going to be a fraud and is going to be a fake. And we're going to get, you know, a match between the two champions and have that whole undisputed thing go on again. And, you know, it's going to be I keep feeling like it's going to be very reminiscent to back in the day when Shawn Michaels was the Intercontinental Champion and then he had to leave. And then Razor Ramon became the Intercontinental Champion. And then when Shawn came back, you know, they had that argument because they both had the belt, you know, and that's what led to the ladder match at WrestleMania 10, you know, with the two belts, was to determine who was the undisputed Intercontinental Champ. I can see something like that totally happening where you have that built-in feud when he comes back. I have a gut feeling that the WWE has worked out a deal with ROH as well. I think, you know, once again, I get flashbacks to Vince working with ECW in the 90s. You know, I feel that he has some kind of an agreement with them. You know, we all know ROH is under new ownership, and I think they might have, you know, communicated and worked something out. You know, the fact that they mentioned Colt Cabana's name so often on WWE programming, and the WWE has just signed the Kings of Wrestling from ROH, and of course they have Seth Rollins and FCW. I mean, if they wanted to, you know, Punk can come back with some of the ROH guys, and we can start a whole nother invasion angle, and, you know, hey, we're the true wrestlers, and we're the true champions, and there's so many places they can go with this, and, you know, who knows if they can even, you know, with the way Raw ended, with Vince kind of getting pushed out, I mean, Vince could even come back with CM Punk and all these guys, and, you know, and start some kind of other, you know, revolution. I mean, there's so many different directions that all this stuff can go, but my gut feeling tells me there's something with ROH. I have no doubt in my mind that pretty much Colt Cabana has signed a WWE contract at this point, and, you know, I could definitely see some kind of ROH group or invasion or something kind of coming back. You know, when Punk does come back, he has some backup, and he proclaims to be the real champion, and then we have that feud between heavyweight champs. So that's my idea for the bigger picture of this storyline. When it's going to happen, who knows? You know, I think if they're smart, they should give it a couple months, so then it's a complete shock when he does come back. You know, I don't want to, you know, next week all of a sudden see Punk on Raw. You know, I want this to stretch out a little bit more, and feel like everybody's like, okay, you know, and kind of moved on from it, and it'll be so awesome when he does show up, you know, with the championship, and he can play that whole role. So that's kind of my idea for the moving forward of this angle.
Yeah, I can see. I definitely see some of that. You know, I think it's good to take some time before you bring him back, and, you know, like kind of let things sort of get back to normal, so to speak, and then, you know, have him come back, you know, whatever. I'm trying to figure out what motivation that, you know, you would have to for him to come back. You know, that's the thing, like that character, you know, he needs a reason to come back, and I'm not really sure what good reason they can come up with to have him come back. I mean, I'm sure they can come up with a good one, but.
Well, I think the most obvious thing for that is just the fact that he just kind of gets sick of somebody else claiming to be the WWE champion because his ego is so big. You know, he wants to, you know, show everybody, you know, I'm the true champ, you know, I'm the WWE champion, and you're just a poser running around with a fake title.
Okay.
You know, because he can play that angle, and I think for the way that they've been playing his ego role of, you know, everything should be about me, and I should be in the collector's cups, and I should be, you know, on every turnbuckle, like all that stuff, I think that's enough of a catalyst for him to just come back and feud, you know, over that whole fact that, you know, you're not the real champ, I am, you know, and I'm here to prove it kind of thing. So, I mean, I think something is just as simple as that would be enough, you know, to go, you know, for the ego side of it.
Okay, no, that's not bad. I'll give you that. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, the big angle on Raw was, as you alluded to, was, you know, Vince being forced out by the board of directors and Triple H now taking charge of WWE in the storyline, and obviously somewhat in real life he's being groomed for that role eventually. So that'll be interesting to see if that leads to kind of a major change in the framework of WWE, of just kind of how they, you know, what kind of character he plays. I'm imagining he'll kind of play sort of a good guy at first and then sort of be corrupted by power kind of thing. That's kind of where that story normally goes, but there's other ways they can do too. You know, it'd be interesting to see how Triple H's WWE's different on screen from Vince's. That, you know, be you know, I like to see them kind of get rid of the GMs and maybe just you know, maybe tweak a few things here and there and just kind of you know, freshen up the product a bit. It just feels like in a lot of ways WWE has been a stale presentation for a while, or at least the same presentation for a while. Obviously, this Punk storyline being a big departure from that. So we'll see if it leads to major changes, or maybe it just be, smaller changes. But I think having Hunter be there as the fresh guy in charge, the fresh face in charge, and, you know, kind of putting his stamp on things, that could lead to some interesting possibilities. And certainly, you know, I imagine part of the story will at least have him maybe extending an olive branch to Punk, and, you know, whether that leads to a comeback or Punk just rejects that, and that, you know, then they go forward with something else. You know, who knows what they do. Obviously, they had the Comic-Con angle today, where Punk showed up to a WWE thing at Comic-Con and then kind of ran down Triple H as they were doing that. And that obviously is keeping this Punk thing sort of, at least in the wrestling news, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. I read all about it, though, and I'm so beating myself up. I was supposed to be at Comic-Con right now, so I read about that, and I was like, no! So, you know, it's kind of a bummer to know that this whole angle went down, you know, when I was supposed to be there. So, but yeah, no, I mean, it's great stuff. I mean, for them to incorporate, you know, him showing up and getting into it with Triple H, and then the remarks he made about, you know, Stephanie and all that kind of stuff. It's very interesting to pursue it. So I'm very curious to see if WWE airs any of this footage, or if it's just, you know, they're just going more in like a viral marketing type thing to kind of keep the angle going, you know, since they're kind of really exposing that whole internet side of things right now. So, I mean, it might just be a way for them to kind of keep the angle alive without having to, you know, do it on TV. So, but it's right. A very interesting thing, and I love it.
Yeah, it's compelling, definitely. I think it's a good, it obviously got some attention, and it fits with the story, and there's a lot of ways you can go with it. I wouldn't play it too heavily on TV, but you might allude, you know, might have Hunter allude to it or something, and, you know, when he's talking or something. You probably want to mention it, but not make a big thing of it, because I think, yeah, if you make too big of a thing of it, if you make it part of, like, the official show, then you kind of ruin the uniqueness of it. So... also Money in the Bank, there were a number of interesting things going on, including two Money in the Bank matches. The SmackDown one won by Daniel Bryan, the Raw one won by Alberto Del Rio. I kind of like the SmackDown one a little better overall, I would say. Although both were, you know, they both had interesting things. I really liked the spot in the SmackDown one toward the end when Alberto took off Rey Mysterio's mask as they were both climbing on top of the ladders, and then got pushed off, and then Alberto was able to go up the ladder for the win. I thought that was a unique finish, you know, something that, you know, I don't know, I've sort of said this before, I don't want to belabor the point, but the ladder matches, they all kind of run together for me after a while with, you know, the craziness and the spots and so forth. I kind of like the things that are less dangerous, that are more fun and interesting, that kind of set them apart. So, but it was nice to see, especially the Daniel Bryan win. That really, sets up a nice story for him. Kind of puts him in a new position. So we'll see what that leads to for him.
Yeah, I've been thinking all week, ever since I watched it, like which Money in the Bank I like better, because both the Raw and the SmackDown were just so good. I think they were two of the, you know, better Money in the Bank matches ever. I loved both of them so much, so it was really hard to, you know, distinguish which one kind of stands out. But I think I'm with you. I think I kind of like the SmackDown one a little bit more myself. They're so close. I mean, there's things I like from both of them. But, yeah, I think the SmackDown one stands out a little bit more. We gave a lot of props on Future Endeavors this past Sunday to everybody in the match. I mean, you know, you had 8 guys in there, and I was actually live at the SmackDown when they announced the 8 participants in the match. And seeing those 8 guys in the ring live, I was like, this is a really interesting lineup, you know? And I wasn't feeling all too hot on it, especially with, you know, Heath Slater in there and stuff like that. I was kind of like, oh, this is weird. You know, there's, you know, so many other guys on the roster. I mean, why not put Ezekiel in there, or Ted DiBiase, you know, Tyson Kidd maybe, you know, just, so, I don't know. It felt odd to put him and even, you know, Justin Gabriel in there, I didn't feel that they really had the right to be in that match. You know, I understood the reasoning was obviously because they wanted a couple, crash test dummies to fill up the spots. But, you know, honestly, like I said, when it was all said and done, I gave, you know, full props to all eight guys, you know, including Heath Slater. And because I thought everybody really pulled their weight and everybody had a chance to shine at one point. And it was just really, really good stuff all the way around. And this was the hardest one to call. As far as a winner goes, you know, I mean, you kind of run through it and you have some ideas, but, you know, it was tricky. I mean, you know, when we did our predictions on the show, you know, I predicted Wade Barrett, you know, Nick went with Sheamus and, you know, Corey went with Cody, you know, we all picked somebody different and it ended up being Daniel Bryan,
yeah.
You know? So, I mean, that was the biggest thing was that we all said, I would love for it to be Daniel Bryan, but there's no way in hell WWE is going to do that right now. So, you know, you kind of overlook it and you're just like, you know, it was kind of like, hey, I almost felt he fit the same mold that Heath Slater and Justin Gabriel did. You're like, they're never going to win it, you know? And, you know, we would love to see him do it, but there's no way. So when he grabbed that briefcase, I completely marked out watching it live because I'm a huge Daniel Bryan fan, and I would love to see WWE push him to the moon and have an opportunity for a heavyweight title. I just never thought WWE would do that. And so, WWE's just been shocking me in this last month, you know, trying out new things and doing special stuff. And, you know, this was the first step right here, first match out the gate, and Daniel Bryan wins. And it's just like, wow, man. You know, so, I mean, great, great stuff. You know, SmackDown tomorrow night, he announces that he's going to cash it in. And, you know, he's not playing the sneak attack role. He has stated when and where he is going to cash in that briefcase. And, you know, and I figured he'd be the first guy to, you know, kind of do that since Van Damme. You know, Van Damme was the only one that actually scheduled a match with his briefcase. And, you know, when Daniel Bryan won it, I said, you know, he's the type of character that would obviously, you know, not take the cheap route, you know. And I just hope to God that he can capitalize. And, you know, the first worry that came over everybody's mind when he won was he's going to be the first guy to lose when he cashes it in. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate because, I mean, that's obviously a way it could go because he'd be a good candidate for that. But with the way that they're going with this and where he's going to cash it in, I really hope that, you know, he becomes the new World Heavyweight Champion. So the match was amazing. All eight guys, I thought, impressed. You know, I wasn't too hot on Kane being in there, but he did good. And, you know, I thought Barrett was awesome. Sheamus, I thought, looked amazing in that match. You know, he has just been so great ever since he's been on SmackDown. I just think he has just reached a whole nother level. I'm such a huge Sheamus fan right now. You know, I've always liked Justin Gabriel. I thought he did some great stuff. You know, Cody is just, you know, moving up and up and up. So, you know, everybody just really played their role great. And it was an amazing Money in the Bank ladder match and an awesome way to kick off the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I thought Cody looked really good. I liked Gabriel doing the hopping on the ladder early. That was a cool spot. And Daniel Bryan he always does that tope through the ropes, but he just did it really full speed. You know, he did it followed by a bunch of dives by Gabriel and Slater and Sin Cara. And then, yeah, Sin Cara got kind of his showcase for a while, kind of dominated through, and then suddenly was a powerbomb through a ladder bridge pretty hard by Sheamus, although Sheamus took an even harder hit on a ladder bridge later on in the match with chokeslam by Kane. And Gabriel, Gabriel had a couple of big spots. He hit that 450, was standing on top of the ladder on the top rope and hit that 450. That was really very narrow margin for error on that, and he hit that really well. And yeah, it was a really good and a really good finish too. It was kind of cool how, you know, Bryan was going up and Cody and Barrett were trying to stop him, and then Bryan like guillotined Cody and Cody fell down, and then Barrett was trying to get the wasteland, but then he kicked him off and then, you know, was able to grab the briefcase. So I thought that was a good finish. You're at definitely a good start. I actually missed it live on the pay-per-view. We had some technical issues, so I didn't watch it until later. So my first match was Brie Bella against Kelly Kelly, which wasn't quite as good. But yeah, it was definitely a pretty exciting Money in the Bank. And the Raw one, yeah, I I wasn't crazy about the beginning with everyone with the ladders inside, but just because it felt like the ladder shots all were just like, I don't know, they seemed like extra soft. They didn't really look particularly believable. But once it got going, I thought it was really good. I liked the everyone climbing up on the ladders and like battering it they were all trying to kind of grab it and they're all kind of battering it like a tetherball kind of thing. And Bourne hitting the 450 off the ladder on the outside, I thought was really cool. Alberto stealing Ray's mask, as I mentioned, for the finish. You know, there was a lot of good stuff. This money bag seemed a little bit shorter and tighter. But everyone, I thought, did a good job again, and it was, it was enjoyable. Like I said, I didn't think either Money in the Bank match stood out necessarily from any other Money in the Bank matches. I mean, like I said, they all kind of run together for me after a while, but they were definitely, both were entertaining, both were fun, both were, somewhat dangerous, although no one, other than maybe the falls and the ladder bridges, I don't think I saw anything that was absolutely too insane. It was enjoyable stuff, no question.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. The Raw one was amazing as well. I actually loved the beginning of it with everybody having a ladder in their hands and just kind of as soon as the bell rang, just start, clinking them together and just going crazy. I just thought it was an interesting way to start the match and to kind of make it a little bit different than the SmackDown one, because that's the big thing with doing two of them on the same pay-per-view is you gotta kind of not repeat yourself, and that's kind of hard to do with the ladders. So, this was an interesting way to start off the match. I thought R-Truth was great, picking up his little mini step stool ladder, since he said on Raw that he was afraid of heights. And, I just thought that was great. And, just seeing everybody smash and then, The Miz getting hurt and then coming back and looking like he's going to steal it. And, this was another kind of hard one to pick. As well, too. I did predict Del Rio just because he seemed like the obvious pick, and, it just seemed to make sense. So I kind of felt that they were going to go his direction, but, Riley's been on such a roll lately, you couldn't really count him out. We thought there was a possibility that maybe they would finally push Kofi, to that next level. You didn't know if Miz was going to get another opportunity. There was several guys on there that, it could have went their direction as well too. But Del Rio, of course, like I said, kind of stood out, and that's why I went with him. It is his destiny, and, that's a big coup for him, man. I mean, winning the Royal Rumble and then winning a Money in the Bank, all in the same year, in pretty much his rookie year, is, pretty damn big, So, once again, hats off to him, and it's almost inevitable that he's going to be a champion here soon. My idea is, honestly, that what I totally see is almost even this Monday, when they finally do the, we got Miz versus Rey Mysterio for the new WWE Championship. I wouldn't doubt Rey Mysterio winning it and then Del Rio cashing in and winning the belt Monday night right after. So, I wouldn't put that past anything. I definitely see Del Rio having the belt here really, really soon. And we all know that his rivalry with Rey, so it's kind of just strikes me as funny that Rey's in the finals here. So, I think that's a way to give Rey another quick championship reign, even if it's just for a minute. He's never held the WWE championship, so in the record book-wise, they can add that to him and then, have Del Rio come down and screw him out of that. So that's kind of my idea of where it goes. But once again, the ladder match itself was just great. Kofi always does amazing stuff. Evan Bourne, I thought, was awesome. I loved the airborne off the ladder on top of everybody on the runway. Everything worked. Once again, I thought everybody had a chance to shine. They did a great job of giving everybody a big spot and a big moment. And, another great, great match. I loved it to death.
Yeah, I was actually thinking on Raw because, of course, during the match we didn't mention that Miz took a pretty nasty-looking spill and left with an apparent knee injury. Although he later returned and it did a big spot where he, ran back and climbed the ladder, and then Ray actually pulled him off, which drew huge boos when Ray pulled him off because people were into the idea of Miz overcoming the injury and being able to climb the ladder. But I was thinking the next night, because Miz was still had the injury, yet 1-2 matches, and presumably they were going to do the final. I was thinking that Miz was going to win, but then was going to lose to Del Rio when he cashed it in, and then Miz was going to turn babyface from that, wanting to get revenge after he was screwed because of his injury. But I guess obviously that's not. Well, I mean, they certainly could still do that, but it's a little bit less effective a week later because he'll presumably have time to heal from the injury. But I could definitely see them going with your direction on Del Rio cashing in after Ray wins. Actually, that's sort of what I would expect them to do. So we'll see. The match was definitely interesting. And another interesting match, particularly the finish, was Randy Orton and Christian for the World Heavyweight Championship, and the stipulation being that Christian could win the match if Orton was disqualified. And I've never seen a match with that stipulation actually end with the disqualification, and this time, in fact, it happened. And normally you would think that that would be kind of the dumbest way to change a title, but the way they pulled this off with Christian, I mean, just absolutely spitting, in Randy Orton's mouth practically, and Orton just going insane and, you know, punching Christian and the ref trying to pull him off. And then when Christian stood up, just giving him a really harsh looking low blow for the disqualification, and just the anger that Orton was able to portray made this finish actually work for me. And then, of course, afterward, Orton destroys Christian, tries to RKO him through the table. The table doesn't break the first time, and then Orton eventually looks like he's going to leave, and then decides he wants to come back and do it one more time, and the table doesn't break again, which I found very amusing, though it looked like it was a little painful for Christian. What on paper looked like it would not be that great. And honestly, I said that in my review of this, that I have not enjoyed watching someone I don't particularly like completely annihilate somebody I do like, since I saw Hulk Hogan beat up Harley Race on Saturday Night's Main Event a very long time ago, after Hogan was screwed out of the title by Andre the Giant, Ted DiBiase. So, good stuff. Despite, like I said, even though I'm not a huge Orton fan, and it's, you know, this feud definitely has been going on for quite a while and looks like it'll at least continue through SummerSlam. But, it was a good chapter, despite on paper not necessarily seeming like it would be. So what did you think?
I loved it. You know, I mean, once again, you know, we've talked about Orton before and kind of how he's been for us and how just kind of haven't really been too much into him. But like I said even before in this show, is, I mean, ever since he's been on SmackDown, I just thought he's been a hell of a lot better. And his feud with Christian has just been amazing. I mean, this is one of those feuds that it's like, if it was any other two guys, I think right now I'd be really pissed to see them fight, you know, four pay-per-views in a row. But with these two guys, for some reason, their chemistry is just great. And, you know, I know a lot of it has to do with Christian, and he probably just brings out something in Orton. And it's just been great stuff. You know, obviously the beginning of it kind of sucked when, you know, Christian had just won the title and then Orton took it from him. And then they had the rematch Over the Limit and Christian lost again. And then they, you know, did Capital Punishment, and then Christian lost again. So then now you had this one, and it's just like, okay, Christian's got to win this one. And then they add the stipulation of, you know, if it's a bad call on the ref's part or a DQ, Christian's automatically the champ. So I was pretty 99% sure Christian was going to walk out with the title at this point. And I figured it was going to end exactly the way it did, with Randy Orton getting DQ'd, because then this way they can obviously pass the belt to Christian, and Randy Orton doesn't have to be pinned, and it's a win-win for everybody. I thought the match was great, you know, which is, it's just to be expected between these two. I mean, they just have great, great matches together. So I thought everything was great. My only beef and my only wish was that Christian would have actually just beat him fair and square and won the title the right way. You know, the stipulation was too much of a cop-out. You know, I don't want to complain too much, because I'm just happy that I can say Christian is now a two-time World Heavyweight Champion, and I'm glad to see him with the belt again, and, have his reign last longer this time. I hate that they had to basically, you know, say that this is the only way that Christian could win the title, is to basically, you know, make Orton DQ him, you know, and it just, it, that's the only downside to this. But, you know, I'm not going to, you know, vent on it too much because the end result is that Christian's the champ again, and I'm very, very happy about that. So I also very much enjoyed, like you did, the table not breaking. I thought that was awesome. You know, I liked that, you know, he got frustrated enough to go back and try it all over again, and it didn't break again because then you saw how really pissed Randy Orton was getting, and I thought for sure he was going to go back and try it for a third time. So it just, you know, great stuff all around. Hilarious that the table did not break. And just, you know, thumbs up once again. I mean, another stellar match on this card.
Yeah, I thought it was the weaker of their matches, which have all been great. So it's not like it was a bad match, but I thought it was more. I thought it took a while to kind of get into gear, or that, and also maybe even more so that it was kind of a lot of the same stuff we've been seeing from them. I presumably. From what I understand, SummerSlam is going to be a no DQ match. I mean, that would make sense based on the disqualification finish here. So hopefully they will be able to do a different type of match and kind of be a little bit more creative, because, like, you know, even though it's been a good feud and I've been fine, you know, the matches have all been entertaining, I would like something a little different from their next installment. And I'm guessing that Christian probably wins at SummerSlam, probably through some nefarious, either somebody, you know, a bunch of guys help him, or he does something dastardly and, you know, in the no DQ match to beat Orton so that Orton can, you know, save face. And then they'll probably maybe even go to Hell in the Cell with it. I mean, it would kind of make sense for them to blow it off there. Or they could blow it off at SummerSlam, I guess. But
yeah, and it's funny you say that, because this is exactly what I said on Future Endeavors, was that I don't think the feud's going to make it to October to do Hell in a Cell, but what I was saying on the show was that this is when it saddens me about the pay-per-views being themed-wise, you know, because a Hell in a Cell match to me is the perfect blow-off to this feud.
Right.
You know, I mean, we've gone through all of these matches. What better way for them to finish this than Hell in a Cell?
Yeah.
I mean, that was my first thought, was a Hell in a Cell match with these two at SummerSlam would be awesome, you know, but obviously, we got to wait till October to see a Hell in a Cell match. So
yeah,
it's like, we're not going to get that. I can pretty much guarantee you we're going to see Christian and Randy Orton again at SummerSlam. And from what I'm hearing, it's just going to be like a no DQ match or something like that. Obviously, it's got to have some kind of stipulation after all these matches. But yeah, it just, you know, to me, this needs to go Hell in a Cell. It needs to go something bigger and better to really kind of to put that end on this feud. So, you know, I wish it would be Hell in a Cell at SummerSlam, because that would be an amazing main event.
Yeah. Well, they could go away from it for a month after SummerSlam and have Christian, you know, fight somebody else. And maybe if somebody interferes in the SummerSlam match, maybe, you know, like Mark Henry, for instance, Orton, Mark Henry and Christian against, you know, a good guy, and then go back to it for Hell. They could both win those matches and go back to it for Hell in the Cell. That'd be okay, I think. But yeah, we'll see. You know, it'll be interesting. Maybe Orton just wins it back at SummerSlam and that's the end of it too. You never know. Or maybe Christian wins it and then Orton is out of the title picture for a while. You know, maybe they, you know, who knows what they do. But it's been a good feud. I think you're right. I think Hell in the Cell needs to be the finish of it, though. And but obviously, if they're going to do that, they'll do it in October. And so we'll see how that works.
Yeah, I think maybe they can revisit it in October, but I don't think that we can do this through SummerSlam, Night of Champions, you know, and like all, you know, and then hit, you know, Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
You know, then we're talking, you know, match 8 or you know, or something. You know, it's just that's getting a little ridiculous, no matter how good their matches are together.
Right.
You know, but I can see maybe taking a break for Night of Champions or something, and then somehow, you know, Orton gets number one contendership or something. You know, I hope that Christian gets it for a couple months. I would not be surprised if Randy Orton gets it right back at SummerSlam, though. But we'll see. But I think that the SummerSlam match, at least for now, will be pretty much the blow off to their feud.
Yeah, it'd be kind of pointless for him to just lose it back at SummerSlam, though. I mean, that would be kind of That would be kind of silly.
But it's Christian, so I don't doubt any.
It's certainly possible, but I wouldn't think they would do the change here if they were going to have it win back at SummerSlam. I mean, who knows? But it just seems like they would.
They had to, though, to keep up the feud, though. If Orton would have beat Christian, there was no way Christian would have gotten another title match at SummerSlam. Push it forward, they had to switch the belt
at
some point after every failed attempt, you know?
I guess if they felt like they needed to continue to SummerSlam, maybe. But, we'll see. The other matches were not as exciting, although Mark Henry and Big Show, they had some nice club run at the beginning, which I always appreciate. Really need Dusty Rhodes to call the match to properly show appreciation for the club run, but that's okay. And then it kind of plotted for a bit, and then Big Show did a shoulder block off the second rope, hurt his knee, and then Mark Henry did a bunch of World's Strongest slams and splashes and one clean, and they kept it pretty short and energetic, which is kind of how I like my big man versus big man matches. And then they did the Mark Henry grabbing the chair and pilmanizing Big Show's ankle. So it was nothing spectacular. In fact, it was barely even good, but it worked for me. Mark Henry has been connecting a lot better by actually showing feats of strength, by throwing Big Show around and kind of actually seeming fearsome. And I think that's been pretty cool. Mark Henry's obviously the guy who's pretty limited, but you can, use him in this role, and I think that works out pretty much fine. So what do you think?
Yeah, this one was a tricky one for me. At first I was kind of thinking, I wasn't too hot on this feud. When it's usually two big guys like this, I mean, it's kind of a boring match. It's kind of a boring feud. I was giving props to WWE for the way they've been setting it up, though, because they've obviously, I think they've been doing a great job ever since Mark Henry got drafted to SmackDown as refocusing him and repushing him as this monster. And I thought the buildup was great with Big Show and him attacking Big Show. I thought the angle was great with how the angle kind of started with Big Show, jumping Mark Henry and beating the crap out of him, before his feud with Del Rio at Capital Punishment, and then, having to be the catalyst for Mark Henry getting his revenge, but then Henry putting him through the announce table and ripping the cage door off and slamming, Big Show through the side of the cage, and the buildup has just been great. But I was still kind of like, no thanks, I don't really want to see this match. But I thought the match was actually pretty decent. I wouldn't complain about it. I thought both guys did a good job of selling each other and building each other up. Definitely saw Mark Henry going over just because the push is so big behind him right now. It doesn't hurt Big Show at this point in his career to lose a match. I think everybody still, believes in him enough. Mark Henry really needed this because the buildup would have just been for nothing if he would have ended up losing. So I thought the ending was picture perfect, hitting the World's Strongest slam, Big Show kicking out makes perfect sense, So then him picking him up, doing it again, and then doing the two running splashes to just kind of add that exclamation point on, I just thought was perfect. So the ending was great, and then I thought the added incentive at the end there very reminded me of Vader. The whole ending there, putting the chair on his ankle and then doing the backwards splash off the ropes was just great stuff. I thought it looked great. I thought Big Show sold it great. The WWE angle right now is that Big Show's out for 6 to 8 weeks because of it. So, it's a great way to run off that storyline that, look, Mark Henry put out the Big Show, So I thought it looked great for both of them. And, it was the first Henry match in a while that I thought was pretty decent. So, once again, wasn't the greatest thing ever, but it was a hell of a lot better than I expected it to be. So, good stuff.
Yeah. Mark Henry had a decent match with Kane on SmackDown a couple weeks ago. So it's been a good run for him.
Yeah, that was the SmackDown I was at. It was pretty good stuff.
Yeah. So the last match we have to talk about was Brie Bella against Kelly Kelly, which it was not really that great. Eve Torres came out with Kelly Kelly and seemed to serve no purpose because she really was not even included in part of the match at all. Didn't really even do anything to prevent the Bellas from cheating. Basically just kind of stood there for a while. So Kelly Kelly won clean. It was pretty short. There were a couple moments of sloppiness, and I generally enjoy watching the Bellas, but this was sort of a little bit of an off night for them. Although I did enjoy their fighting with each other, and one of them saying she doesn't ever eat to Kelly Kelly, explaining why Bree should have won the match. I guess it was Nikki who made that comment to Bree. So yeah, nothing to see there.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add to it either. I mean, you know, this was obviously the downside to the pay-per-view, but, you know, I mean, it, you know, most people don't factor, you know, the Divas matches in with the rest of the card anyway. So, you know, it was what it was. I thought it was short enough to where it didn't really bother anything. You know, I mean, I don't mind the Diva matches being included on a pay-per-view. I kind of expect it. I think it's only fair, you know, for their title to be showcased. So it was what it was. You know, I'm not too hot on the Kelly Kelly Bellas feud. I hope it's over and we can move on to a different Diva. But, you know, there's not much to dive into on this. It just was what it was.
Yes, it existed. It happened. We have noted it, and now we are done with noting it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So obviously, great show. You know, we've been through that, and WWE's kind of moved out of its spring doldrums a little bit and moved into some experimentation, which is kind of what they've been doing in the last few years. You know, obviously Nexus was last year, and they've sort of tried to do some interesting things in the summer. So I'm pretty optimistic that we'll maybe have a chance to see some to see some good stuff.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like I said, now's a great time to be a fan, and I think they're willing to experiment a little bit more than normal, and you know, we're seeing some fresh stuff, and you know, that was. I've been really excited about the direction. I was a little saddened by the tournament that the finals ended up being Miz and Rey Mysterio, two former champions. You know, when the lineup came out, I was pretty excited with who was in it, and I was really hoping they were going to give an opportunity to someone new. You know, I was really hoping maybe, you know, Kofi would get to the finals, maybe R-Truth get another shot. You know, I thought they were going to go a new direction with it. So I was a little disappointed that they went with the two former champs and to be in the finals. But I mean, other than that, I just think everything's just been so unique and fresh with the whole Punk angle, and the pay-per-view is amazing. And I mean, it's definitely got a lot of people psyched to watch. And, you know, I'm definitely, you know, looking forward to how Monday turns out now that, you know, Triple H is in charge. And, you know, I think it's a great time to be a fan. So I'm very excited.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the Vince Triple H angle. So what were your thoughts on that as it was unfolding?
It was interesting. You know, I find the angle kind of hard to bite when you sit back and look at it from a realistic standpoint, just because, you know, it's Vince's company, and I just find it very hard to believe that can even really happen, that they could just push him out like that, you know. But but for TV purposes, you know, I think it was great, and you know, honestly, since it's happened, I've read a good handful of things that say there's a lot more validity behind this than what a lot of people think. You know, I mean, obviously Vince is not pushed out. I mean, we all know that. But there, you know, from what the story seems to be behind the scenes is that, you know, this is the start of Vince kind of stepping down, you know, kind of stepping away. You know, the plan is pretty much for Triple H and Stephanie to take over the company. And, you know, this is a true life direction here, you know, and I don't know if they're just testing the waters by doing this or what, but, you know, there was a lot of true feelings behind what went down on Monday night, and almost real emotion that obviously came from Vince's face and almost in Triple H's face too. Like this was, you know, really going down. I know even X-Pac was tweeting the other night saying that Triple H had sent him a couple texts before Raw went on, and he had sent one message that said, "The last 5 minutes of Raw are more real than you think." You know, so I'm very curious to know what the true direction is behind this. But, you know, it seems like there is some honest to God validity behind what went down. But I think it's exciting. I think it leads, you know, once again, for some fresh stuff, because Triple H can come out now on Monday and he can say, hey, this is the way I run things. There's the way that I think it should go. And we might see a lot of new, fresher things. You know, what if this leads to finally the push of Zack Ryder, or, you know, even just little things that people have been wanting, you know. know, more focus on the tag team division. Who knows? You know, I'm just throwing stuff out there, but I'm just saying, you know, this gives a fresh breath of air that they can run with Triple H saying, here's how we're going to do things now that I'm in charge, you know? So I'm looking for some fresh stuff. I'm a big Triple H fan, love to see him back on TV, and, you know, happy that, you know, he'll probably be more of a prominent figure right now. So I'm excited about where this angle can take us.
Yeah, I wasn't really super into it until Vince started really showing the emotion, and then I kind of started buying into it more, and I think the fans related too. I mean, once they kind of saw the emotional stuff, they really kind of went from, you know, doing the hey, you know, the na-na-na's goodbye thing to really, you know, celebrating Vince and clapping and, you know, kind of seeing the emotional, you know, significance of the moment, which I thought was pretty cool. And obviously is a credit to Vince as a performer. I thought it was well done. I thought for a moment, I thought it was a little bit, like the timing of it was a little bit weird because like they had just kind of were, Cena had just had a really good promo kind of, you know, talking about why he didn't want, you know, why he didn't want to win the title or to defend the title by, you know, getting the screw job and being against that and, you know, talking about what the title meant to him and what the job meant to him and, but that he was willing to face the consequences and so forth. And I thought that was really just a really strong thing. And then Hunter coming out and them doing that with Vince, I just thought like, oh, that just kind of pushed Cena's thing aside a little bit. And it's like, oh yeah, by the way, Cena, you're not really fired. And that just kind of, for a moment I thought, well, that's kind of silly, but by the end of it, I was on board, and they seemed to be, you know, like I said, handling the Punk stuff right too. It wasn't like, you know, for you know, people were talking about that for a night instead of talking about Punk, but I think that's okay because of how they're going to, you know, they're going to let Punk simmer for a while probably, and then bring him back into, you know, whenever that happens. So that's the proper way to handle it. So I think the whole thing I thought, you know, was pulled off well, and you know, and definitely interesting to kind of ponder the WWE's future without Vince, because obviously Vince isn't going to be around forever, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how the company shifts as Hunter takes more of the day-to-day control, you know, even if Vince is around for the big picture stuff, and it's obviously it's, as long as he's alive and in good health, it's going to be his company, but you know, how it'll really affect the product. I mean, that's kind of been the thing this year as Hunter has, you know, been sort of, you know, taking a stronger hand in things. And so it's exciting stuff. The unknown is always an interesting thing.
So. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it just leaves us, you know, something to look forward to. So,
yeah. So, I don't know, anything else in the world of WWE that we should talk about?
How about Sankara messing up his opportunity this soon into his tenure?
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of people that don't know, obviously the day after Money in the Bank, he was suspended for 30 days for violating the wellness policy, looking like some steroids in his system there. So he has been suspended the first time. Ruling is a 30-day suspension. So WWE, of course, playing it off as a storyline with the Money in the Bank, that from that powerbomb from Sheamus, he, you know, bruised or broke something, and he's out for 4 weeks miraculously. Just craziness, honestly. You know, one of the last guys I expected to see just pop up on a suspension list. You know, I mean, this guy's been given such a big opportunity, and the push has been so strong behind him. You know, it's just crazy that he's messed it up now. And, you know, I'm already hearing the rumors that they might not even bring him back, you know, to TV, or might not even bring him back at all once his suspension is up. So, I mean, there's a big chance this could be the end of the Sin Cara run. So it's just unfortunate, man. I mean, this guy obviously had a big potential, big future in the WWE to kind of take over for Mysterio. And, you know, when I went live a couple weeks ago on SmackDown, I mean, I can tell you, man, the amount of those masks that I saw in the crowd and how many kids were wearing Sin Cara shirts and masks and everything was just was ridiculous. I mean, he's really, you know, superstardom wise, has moved up so quick in such a short period of time. So just, you know, I hate to see him blow this opportunity. So, you know, hopefully he gets another chance to redeem himself. But kind of shocking news, you know, coming out from the WWE there. And especially once I found out, too, that supposedly he failed his test back in June, like June 20th. So it's been about a month since he failed his test. So WWE used to suspend you, like, the instant, you know, they got that result back. And even if you were scheduled for something, it was pretty much, you know, too bad and you missed out on the payday. So kind of interesting that he failed like a month ago and they still continued to, you know, push him on TV and still let him compete at Money in the Bank. So pretty interesting that they let that ride. But, I mean, that's pretty been the a pretty big news story this week about his suspension.
Yeah. Well, they've kind of forgiven and forgotten on certain instances with the tests. I mean, after the suspensions, they've had plenty of people that they really have just kind of, you know, pushed again and not really been a big thing. So who knows what'll happen with Sin Cara. You know, it could certainly go either way. He's had, seems like he's had his issues fitting in, although, like you said, you know, there, he also has his fans and his audience that, you know, he seems to have drawn in. So, you know, if he keeps doing that, they'll probably keep him around unless there's, you know, some compelling reason not to. Yeah, unfortunate, obviously. And a surprise, you know, it's been a while since they've really had a drug suspension. I was, you know, kind of thinking about that a few weeks ago. Like, it seems like it's been a long time since, you know, they had a, you know, major wellness violation, at least that I can recall. So, you know, I guess it's good that people aren't, you know, brazenly violating the wellness policy anyway. So, but, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's much more to say about it other than hopefully, you know, it'd be nice to give him another chance because I like him, even though, you know, it hasn't been a completely smooth transition for him in there. He certainly had a great career in Mexico. I've seen, you know, a handful of his matches there, and it seems like he has some potential. It really did show a lot in the Money in the Bank match and was really, you know, got a good reaction before he was, you know, taken out by Sheamus. I mean, people were into his spots and into what he was doing. So I like the idea in general of WWE getting out of the mold of, you know, the typical, you know, sports entertainers and, you know, bringing in some other international guys and bringing in with guys with different body types and so on and so forth. So, you know, if Sin Cara can succeed, that, you know, can, you know, light the way for other guys who have different backgrounds and, you know, maybe making WWE a little bit more just diversity when it comes to styles of wrestling and talents and so forth.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I've been a fan of him. I mean, you know, like you said, it hasn't been the easiest transition and we've all seen the botches and this and that, but you know, I mean, it's a different style and he's adapting and, you know, I think he can put on an amazing match and I thought he did awesome in the Money in the Bank as well. And, you know, he had his new cool white outfit and, you know,
yeah.
He definitely deserves another shot. I mean, they've given more than one chance to a lot of guys that have failed. And you're right. It's been a long time since we've seen one of these suspensions. So, you know, hopefully, you know, he'll get another shot here. I know that I read an article just earlier today of him doing an interview down in Mexico, and he's swearing up and down that basically the whole thing's just a misunderstanding, and it's just, you know, that he tested because of some kind of medication he was on and this and that. So, you know, who knows what the true story is, but he's saying, you know, it's just a misunderstanding, and, you know, he's looking for another chance here, and hopefully we can move on past the 30 days. So, you know, all we can do is see where it goes. So, you know, best of luck to him.
Sure. All right, why don't you tell everyone about future endeavors and plug anything you need to plug?
Sure thing. You know, future endeavors, you guys listen to this, obviously you must love wrestling. So future endeavors live every Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern. On Blog Talk Radio, you can go to future-endeavors.com to listen to, you know, our most current episode and all the archives. We're in our, you know, 50-something episodes now. I think we just did our 53rd episode, almost been on a year now. So, you know, really good times going on. And, you know, we bring you pretty much 2 hours of entertainment every Sunday night. So check us out and give us a shot if you haven't. I'm sure you'll love it. We're also on Facebook, so go facebook.com/futureendeavors and give us a like on there. Just kind of pimping out another new show that's going on too that we're doing now, myself and Nick NAC Gator on Twitter. that also does future endeavors with myself. Me and him have an entertainment podcast now that we've been doing for a couple weeks, and it's all about TV, movies, music, the whole nine, all entertainment based. It's called Am I on the Air? So you can follow that on Twitter, Am I on the Air BTR. On Twitter and also on Facebook, so facebook.com/amiontheair. Pretty, you know, same thing, two-hour show. Also on Sunday nights now, actually at 9 p.m. Eastern, so we're doing both shows back-to-back, so you got Am I on the Air at 9 p.m. and then Future Endeavors at 11, so a four-hour block of entertainment for you guys right there that we're doing it now. So if you're into the entertainment side of things, definitely check out the show. I'm sure you'll love that. And then, of course, wrestling-wise, Future Endeavors, so... myself on Twitter, DX Don Mega, and Future Endeavors on Twitter as well. So follow us along for all the gloriness.
All right, sounds good. And everyone, of course, check out WrestleSpective.com and FairToFlare.com for lots of wrestling goodness. And thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Let's be honest. Most wrestling websites suck. BS rumors, schoolyard gossip, plagiarism. It's no wonder why no one believes anything they read on the internet. Well, if you can't get something done right, you might as well do it yourself. Presenting the Fair to Flare Quarterly from the writers of FairToFlare.com and over a dozen other wrestling websites. We're not copy and pasting what we read in some newsletter. This is 100% original content from the best wrestling bloggers on the internet. In-depth analysis of the art of pro wrestling, debate, artwork, and humor. The Fair to Flare Quarterly will raise the bar of what wrestling journalism can and should be. Professionally edited and produced, and every contributor will be paid for their work. Order your copy of the Fair to Flare Quarterly today at FairToFlare.com. The better wrestling media has arrived.